tonight on the Disney Sunday Movie, the Davises are moving into a new house.
Definite fixer-upper.
Where the tenants are deceased, but not departed.
This house is not haunted.
Keep an eye out for the Boogity Man.
What Boogity Man?
Boogity, Boogity.
Now it's every man, woman, and child for himself.
I saw him!
What a weirdo.
Dad's gonna negotiate with Mr. Hamburger.
It's spirited family fun. Mr. Boogity.
I'd move.
Well, hello out there in podcast land, and welcome back to Guilty Pleasures, the show where we celebrate the movies we love despite what critics, public opinion, or even our own God-given sense might tell us. I'm your host, Lou Hare, for the Front Row Network. Welcome to the first of two contributions that Guilty Pleasures is making to the October MonsterCast series. I'm sure if you've been listening to the podcast, you've been getting all sorts of horror content. And this is our contribution, and what a contribution we have for you. I'm very excited tonight because we are going to be talking about the 1986 made-for-TV movie, Mr. Boogity. And to join us on this discussion, first off, a regular to Guilty Pleasures, although I think it's been a minute since we've had you on, but I'm glad to have you back. Please welcome back Christian Crosby. How's it going, Christian?
Hey, Lou, thanks for having me. Yeah, the last time I was here is when we took a trip back to 1950s Florida to visit with Mr. Al Capone.
Yes.
And Tom Hardy and his dementia riddled brain.
Yes. Okay. I was trying to think the last time we had you on, and I think it was that. I remember you, we famously are still trying to record The Fanatic, which we have watched, but have yet to record. So
it is. Well, we've got to the point now where I feel like I kind of have to watch it again.
Yeah.
Cause like I have my notes still from The Fanatic, but at the same time, like I don't really remember everything. Oh God.
I want to just read those notes like devoid of the film. Just go back and try to see if you can piece it together like Memento style. Like, what is this?
It's pretty funny.
All right. And joining us, rounding out the panel, somebody who I knew was very excited to occasionally it's sometimes a negotiation to get her on the podcast, but when it came to Mr. Boogity, she was right on board. Please welcome back Donna Hare. How's it going, Donna?
It's going good.
Are you excited?
I'm excited about Mr. Boogity.
Mr. Boogity. Who isn't? For those of you who are not familiar, quick rundown, or if you hadn't heard the, hopefully you got enough from the little intro that we did at the beginning, the original TV advertisement for Mr. Boogity that ran, because yes, this was originally made in 1986 for the Wonderful World of Disney, the Disney Sunday Night Movie. And so a quick plot summary. When the Davis family move into their new home, they soon discover it's haunted by a mysterious colonial ghost. It stars I was really surprised, the first of many surprises, about how many actors I recognized from this film. It stars Richard Masur, a very well-known character actor, and Mimi Kennedy, who's also currently on the sitcom Mom. But then Benji Gregory, who most people would recognize as the little boy from Alf, David Faustino, Bud Bundy from Married with Children, and the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Christy Swanson. So I was very excited to see all of those faces pop up.
So in your research, did you see that this was supposed to be a series and that it failed? And so that's how we got...
I did. Yes, this was not just a film. This was a pilot. This was
Where were they going to go with this? I was floored when I read that. Where are you?
Wait. Bud Bundy is in this movie.
Yes, he's one of the little boys. Child. He's the middle child.
He's Corwin.
He's Corwin. Yes, that is
which
him.
Which is the dumbest name for a kid I've ever heard in my entire life. Wow, he put some miles on himself between 1986 and Married with Children. Oh my God.
He did. Puberty was rough.
He was ridden hard and put up wet. Like, poor kid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's okay. Yeah. We also,
and John Astin was in it as well. Don't forget John Astin.
Yes, exactly. I was just about to say, and speaking of sitcom staples, John Astin, the original Gomez Adams, of course, at this time, he was mostly known for his stints on Night Court as Harry Anderson's weird, crazy dad, which is how I knew him first.
Oh,
it was my introduction to him.
Wow.
But apparently he's, you know, a storied character actor, you know, 7-year-old me didn't quite get that at the time. So yeah,
I had met John Astin before, and had I remembered that he was in this movie, that's all I would have talked to him about. It was back in my partying days, and he actually wanted to say hello to me in one of those weird situations. And I just said, hi, nice to meet you, and walked away from him.
What?
Yes.
So why was he jonesing to meet you?
You guys will be familiar with this story. I was at the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. when we were in college together. He was giving away one of the ACTF awards.
Wow.
Wow.
That's fantastic. So you,
I was you, very drunk. Yes.
You big time Gomez Adams.
Wow.
I did. Yeah. Yeah, I did. And it's kind of what I talk about in my 12-step meetings now. It's just like the first thing. It's not the relationships. Well, I guess it's the most important relationship that I've ruined, the one between me and John Astin.
What could have been. But yeah. No, so this was a delight to discover. This was the first time I had seen this movie, and it stunned my wife that I had not seen this movie. So I know I know both of you have more vivid memories of discovering this film. So let's start with you, Donna. What are your earlier memories of Mr. Boogity?
So based on the date, I had to have been about 9 when I first saw it. So I would have seen it live on Sunday with the commercials. And I remember being very nervous through the whole thing because of the spooky elements to it and very worried about, oh, Mr. Boogity. Oh.
So this genuinely scared you as a child?
It did not gremlin scare me.
Okay.
Okay, I didn't have nightmares for weeks, but it just made my pulse quicken like, ooh, okay. What's going to happen? So like a fun thrill, not so much as a I still need therapy thrill.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Christian, how about you?
I would have been a little bit younger when the first one came out. If memory serves, it was taped off the television. I want to say, and we'll talk about the sequel later, that this was recorded when the sequel came out, and my parents just recorded both of them for me. So I have like a replayed version of this. Same with the, and I don't know if you'll probably mention this later, the Michael Eisner intro that exists. All the commercial breaks were, I remember, still there. And then, like, I was obsessed with Mr. Boogity. I probably have seen this movie more than I've seen every other movie in my life, I'd have to probably say. In those weird sort of, like, if you were to Slumdog Millionaire my life and go back and find out trivia about me, like, there's lines in the movie that I have absorbed, forgotten about, and like still like repeat the joke, the Mimi Kennedy joke. We need to call a realtor. What did you say? We need to call a realtor. That I've done that referencing Mr. Boogity and forgotten that that's what I was referencing.
Wow. It's deep in you.
And like, I remember while the commercial breaks were coming, when I watched it today, my pulse started to pick up a little bit when I knew that we were getting to the points that used to scare me as a kid. The rocking chair with the bear missing, the thing that scared me the most and gave me nightmares and nightmares and nightmares. And for years after I lost obsession with this movie was the sequence with the devil when John Astin tells the story. When he gets the cloak from the devil, the image of, oh, that's the person they talk about in church. And this is this is what he looks like. And like, I knew that it was like kind of like a garish representation of the devil, but at the same time, I'm like, well, this is as close as I'm going to actually get to seeing what the real one, like, I'd never seen another version of the devil before this. So that's what I just assumed that he was. It terrified me. Absolutely terrified me.
Wow. That's,
it's funny that that's what terrified you. Like, not the light and the suspense of them walking to the door. Like, what's behind the door? But the devil.
It's interesting because, yeah, you have those weird, those things. And this is where it's so crazy to hear you guys talking about it because I, like I said,
you got
to
see it with adult eyes.
I watched it for the first time as a 40-year-old man in the year 2020. So
he was very smug watching it through all. Watching it because this is probably the second time I've seen this now. Once as a 9-year-old, yeah. Now as a 43-year-old. And like, I'm still tittering, like, ooh, here it comes. And he's like,
yeah. I'm like, well, yeah.
But my daughter, she's like, ooh, what's going to happen next? Yeah. So she was there on my wavelength. So she appreciated it so much. So she wanted to watch the second one immediately as soon as the first one was done.
Yes.
That is, I'm like, so happy to hear that, that like a new generation can be terrified of the thing that scared. Well, like, you know, when you compare, especially like, you know, suspense or horror movies from different generations, something is lost in the translation, and that makes me very happy to know that something as like, let's be honest, it doesn't look like a very good movie. It's a TV movie, 1986, still captures the. Or still like is able to hold the attention of someone who has the internet available to them. You know what I mean?
So. Yes. And it also, I'm not, it's as I've become a parent, I've become more prudish in some of these things because I also realize one of the reasons I probably didn't see this movie as a child was because, my parents or my, I shouldn't say my parents, my father was very into horror movies and was also very much not into, letting his children dictate what he was going to watch. So, so I'm watching like Nightmare on Elm Street movies at this time frame. Friday, I'm one of those kids whose dad took him to Friday the 13th Part 6.
I remember like some dads will take their kid hunting. Uh-huh. And then like bleed the child by rubbing blood on their face. And like your dad's like, you watch Freddy kill these teenagers and I'm going to rub popcorn butter on your forehead.
Yeah. So we call them Midwest baptism.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's fine because it's, And so like, I like all these things that I know, like people, like all of my contemporaries talk about these kinds of things and like, remember me so scared. And I was like, yeah, I was already watching Jason gut people like a fish. So Mr. Book, this is like, I'm also like wistful because I was like, this is what I should have been watching. Yeah. This is what should have been scaring me as a child instead of becoming like desensitized to just bloodletting. But no, so let's get into it. Let's talk about it. So we mentioned that, the premise is very simple. It's a 45-minute movie, by the way. I don't know if we've mentioned that, but yes, it was only for the first hour of the Disney Sunday Night Movie, which was, I think sometimes it was an hour, sometimes it was 2 hours, depending on the movie they were going to show, or sometimes they padded it with cartoons. So yeah, this runs a lean 45 minutes without commercials, or the Michael Eisner commentary at the beginning. And the setup's real simple. Family moves into a house. House has a ghost. And go.
And family lives for gags.
And family. Yeah, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this family.
Gag City.
This family is exhausting.
Yeah. They certainly are. Especially when I was a kid, I thought this is a Midwestern upbringing. I thought there was like 5 occupations that a person could have. For men, it was doctor, police officer, firefighter. For women, it was nurse or teacher. Those were so to discover that this man owns some sort of novelty store. First of all, the blow to my mind was a retail business to begin with. But then secondly, that one could make their living selling gags and jokes and funny and whoopee cushions was just like it was a really eye opening experience to a young Christian.
And to be able to expand, because that's how they moved to this place in the first place. They're like, we've got a whole untapped market here in this in this sleepy northeastern town. The rubber vomit market has been completely abandoned. There's a void.
There isn't another whoopee cushion for another 145 miles. We own this place.
And the family's all, except for the daughter, the whole family is so into this to the point where the boys have matching members only jackets with the dad.
Mm-hmm. Kind of sweet.
It's
kind of like you could see how much they looked up to their father.
They really, yes, they did. But
yeah,
that's funny, Dad.
This
the poor women in that family.
Yeah. So do you think Eloise, the mom, like, did she married into that? Right. She had to know what she was getting into, because it's kind of, can feel like it's kind of like politics. Well, you don't marry into a joke family.
She married into her family, because isn't it her brother that keeps coming?
Oh, that's true. Because we do learn that in the sequel. Yes, Bride of Boogity, which.
I've merged them in my mind now as one.
Yes. Well, you know. They should be
spoilers.
Seen. Yeah, they should be seen together, like, you know, the Lord of the Rings films.
He was the Patrick Swayze of the gag market, of the Dirty Dancing. Like her hoity-toity family didn't want her to do anything with him, but you know, the heart wants what the heart wants, and
they run with it because they have. All of these different practical jokes. The first one we get is the classic rubber vomit. Or upchuck.
The joy buzzer.
The fake toaster. And that's the thing. This guy is so focused on jokes. He basically thinks that everything around him is a prank. So when Mr. Boogity starts haunting, he just thinks everybody else is playing pranks. It's like, he thinks that, like, everyone around him is basically a practical joker.
Well, clearly, because the only thing they moved were the products of the store. In their house, they moved nothing. There are no boxes with stuff. All gag stuff. They don't show any boxes that have personal belongings.
There's no furniture.
Like, they move into house, they keep all that furniture, and it's just the gag stuff.
Yeah. There's no electric shock hand buzzer like wholesalers, but like you buy it, you own it until you sell it. And that's how it works.
Was this some like pyramid scheme that they got involved in?
I think he bought a whole bunch of stuff and now has to sell it off.
Which is why he sells joy buzzers by the caseload, as he says. Yeah.
I'm glad that you brought up the costumes, because I noticed the matching members only jackets with Gag City or whatever the business is called on the back. But then both of the women, I know Christy Swanson is in a denim jacket, and I think that the mom is in a denim shirt as well. But then, like, John Astin is the most garishly dressed realtor I've ever seen.
Uh-huh. And those eyebrows.
Yeah, I don't know how to. In the scene where they go to the historical society and you get a better look at his costume. Well, he's wearing a cape in the first scene. Mm-hmm. In the second scene, he has the only way to like describe the lapels are like how Continental soldiers' lapels are pinned back against the coat like that, and they're a different color than the rest of the coat. It was he looked like he was maybe leading a marching band of some kind. It was fascinating. Fascinating costume choices.
Yeah, so he is both like the town historian and also the town realtor.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I guess who better to tell the history of the house you're going to buy? But then he encourages them. That's what's confusing. He
tells them not to move.
Yeah, he sells them the house.
He knows it's haunted.
Then why sell it to him in the first place?
Maybe his conscience got the better of him.
Nobody's coming into that shop of his. He needs to eat. You know what I mean? He'll sell him a haunted house.
He needs that commish.
Yeah, he needs the commish to buy more of those absurdly large pop-up history books, which that's how he tells the story of the town, which I was just like, oh, well, this is a, these are how books work, you know, sign me up, because I can get behind this. This is what reading is supposed to be. All right. Count me in.
Yeah. And that's a real ancient book, too. Like, he brings it out. Like, this thing's at least a couple of hundred years old when he cracks it open. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the pop-up technology is spot on.
Oh, yeah.
And nothing's bent on it. Like, if I had a pop-up book as a kid, that thing was origami by the end of the week. It was, everything was bent and folded, pristine. He takes care of his literature. Yeah. That's important. That was one of the first, that's one of the first clues into this movie is that, yeah, this family is odd. They're it's a very loving family except for like the snooty daughter, but they quickly get to her. But I will say, so the dad on this, he denies like their fears at every turn. He downplays it almost like to the very end that like everything's fine. His children are terrified.
Yeah.
And he spends the whole time basically like, what you doing, kids?
They're terrified, and he convinces them to sleep together downstairs and then tell ghost stories.
Yes.
He's like, I will reinforce these fears that you've had.
Yeah. Yeah, what better way to help calm the fears of the children who think they're being haunted than campfire ghost stories? That's winning parenting right there.
Yeah. He's a treasure, though. I think Richard Mazur was the president of the Screen Actors Guild for a long time.
He was. Yeah, he is. Yeah. And he was. And yeah, just prolific character actor. Been in all sorts of stuff. And like he's everybody, by the way, in this. I will say everyone in this movie is actually pretty good. I mean, what you would think when you hear, okay, made for TV movie from the 80s, you're going to think, okay, this is kind of cheesy, but he's like everybody. And most of these people went on to do other things. Like there, this is actually for a TV movie, a really solid cast. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and there's no like feud, but I will say to me, the star of this movie is Mimi Kennedy as Eloise. She, like you mentioned it earlier, Christian, like her choices, like with the realtor gag, like mm-hmm. her line readings, like she's taking things that are on that are not on the page and making them work in a way that she needs a retroactive Emmy. She was a delight for me.
She's like if Frances McDormand had like a couple martinis before every scene. She's just like a looser Frances McDormand.
Yeah. I sign me up for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go around. Let's start talking about some scenes or moments from the movie. I know Christian, you mentioned you've got a very deep history with this film. What's a scene that jumps out to you want to talk about?
Well, I think the thing that probably was responsible, like even to this day with my interest in, and as I mentioned on the show before, I have a history podcast. My interest in history and like folklore in general is the scene is my favorite part of any scary movie, any horror novel that I've ever read, any sort of is the exposition thing where we find out the history of why things are the way that they are. It's my favorite part in any of supernatural type thing like that. So the story of where we find out Mr. Boogity's origins via really bad set design
to match the pop-up book. As the pop-up book come to life. Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
I didn't even put that together,
yeah,
Donnie. I
was just like, oh, I just thought
they ran out of money.
No.
I think it's probably a little bit of
child's imagination of the book, and they're seeing it come to life. And money jail—that is what that's about.
I would. I have to say, this is the first time I've watched this movie since going through puberty, and the Widow Marion is a smoke show. Oh my God. To me, when I was a kid, it was just some blonde lady that was on the screen. But like, now that I'm older, I'm like, holy crap. I would have sold my soul to kill this woman and her kid. Yeah. But yeah, that was, it was, I thought that was really, and then I was terrified of the actor playing Mr. Boogity. I think probably more than him as Mr. Boogity. He was scary because the kids are all scared of him. I think I was scared of him as well. Yeah. And then, like I said, the whole thing with the devil, really, really screwed me up, as a child.
Yeah. It's such an interesting idea. Because it's something that you don't think about, at least in kids movies, that they actually do take the time to give him a backstory, but I do love the fact that it's just this colonial, like, pilgrim.
Yeah. They're pilgrims.
They're pilgrims. And it's basically an old dude who got rejected.
Yeah.
He's like mean old white man, hits on pretty lady, gets rejected.
Sells his soul to the devil
and
blows up his house
for 300 years, then torments the world because he got shot down one time.
We went through, Disney especially went through this thing that I remember was like somewhat popular because of like it had been 300 years since the Salem witch trials, that like that's what like the big plot point in Hocus Pocus is. Mm-hmm. And like I feel like towards the, when we reach like the, you know, 300 years from the 1690s, 1680s, when that was very in vogue in New England, we had the Blair Witch Project. We had a bunch of like really New England-y supernatural stuff, even though Blair Witch Project takes place in Virginia. It's not important. I just thought that was an interesting trend. Maybe it's a trend. Maybe I'm just noticing it. But yeah, I thought that was kind of weird that, or cool that they capitalized on that.
I do also notice that in the Disney form, they just mention that they became ghosts. They don't mention that Boogity like murders a child.
Well, they do when they say his house blows up.
Yes, but he says the house blew up and he became, and they became ghosts.
Yes.
Not,
yes,
Boogity kidnapped a child and blew him up.
But apparently when the house blew up, there were lots of heaping flames because Mr. Boogity has a lot of scarry mass where he was clearly burned.
Yes. Meanwhile, the child, nothing.
Because they're good people.
They're good. Okay.
Yeah. He's ugly because he's bad. Yeah. They're pretty because they're good.
So the ugliness is a manifestation of his evil.
Yes. Not necessarily the burns he accrued when he was on fire.
This is a very intricately thought out 45-minute film.
It is. There's a lot to think about.
The one thing that I hold this movie in very high regard. The only thing I should say that struck me as silly was the dancing mummy.
No, I love that part.
Oh, we're back.
I love that part. That's one of the, like, I remember like four things maybe from the movie. I remember the rocking chair with the bear and being really scared. I remember the peeling the footsteps off. Like the guy's like, oh, this is great. I remember that. I remember Maid Marian, or Widow Marian.
Widow Marian.
Marian, and at the end, reuniting. And I remember the stupid mummy dancing. Like, I loved that.
Now, yeah. did you love it in a, you were you scared by
no,
it?
No, I
time?
Think it was okay. Just cool looking. Like, okay. Here's this mummy, and then it just comes to life, and it dances, and it's cool, and then it just flops, and it lays there.
Mm-hmm. I want to know the out of work Broadway actor that they got to just like, you know, come in on an afternoon and be like, cause like that mummy gives a really energized performance in those moves. And like, oh, and because we don't see your face, you're technically playing a creature. You're not really playing a part. So you're a special effect. You're not a character. So you can't really put this on your resume. Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, and the best part about it, he's so animated and everything else is animated because that's the big scene. We don't see Mr. Boogity as a ghost until the end of the movie. And when he does, he doesn't move. He, like, stands in one place and everything else is moving around him. He, like, haunts everything and here comes this mummy out of nowhere, which also didn't make a whole lot of sense. Why there's a...
That's a gag, one of the gag things.
Was that...
All of the stuff they were using were gag stuff.
The mummy was a gag?
I'm pretty sure.
They had like a gag mummy.
The mummy was like, yeah.
Yeah, just like the vacuum cleaner.
Because you know, he's got like fake hands and stuff. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, all right.
It's probably from the Halloween collection.
Okay, okay, all right. I'll go with it.
I'm sure the mummy does something.
Well, I mean, sure, yes. Okay, yeah, because that's what I was thinking there. Like, okay, the makeup is so delicate, and the cape is probably like 50 pounds that the actor's like, I'm not moving. I'm staying in this place, and I am pointing, and everything else around me can...
Because that's showing how powerful he is. Yeah. Everything around him moves.
But for being very powerful, what does he do? What does Mr. Boogity do? Is he just there to scare them away? Because he doesn't like do anything to them until they turn the vacuum cleaner on.
Right.
Like, what's his end game? That's what I want to know. What's Boogity's? Yeah.
Well, if we jump ahead to the second one, spoiler, he wants to use them to get Marion to marry him.
Dude, it's been 300 years. Let that go.
That was a toxic
masculinity, dude.
that's what Mr. Boogity is. They're defeating the ghost of toxic masculinity.
That's right.
Real.
The thing that after they defeat Boogity, the dad, Richard Mazur, says something like, "Oh, we finally did it." And I want to be like, "You didn't do crap. The kid did it." You're like, you're sitting there like you got under Boogity's spell and you pretended to climb it, which is the laziest choice they could have possibly. His Richard Mazur's curse is that he's like taking the first step up and down a ladder over and over and over again, and he can't move.
Mm-hmm.
But like, we also, there's no shot of his feet. So he just, it's very awkward. He just kind of looks like he's going up, and he's like, "I'm trying." And it must have been like, "Hey, listen, cut, print. We got it. Just moving on." The kid is the one that outsmarts, or doesn't really outsmarts. He just moves a vacuum in a different direction. But the kid's the one that saved the day.
Right, which is, I mean, very 80s, very Disney. It's like, yeah, of course the kids get it. But the mom just stands there and screams.
Well, aren't she and the daughter frozen?
They're frozen with the big hair, with like the big fro. Yeah, so they're, yeah, I mean, it's up to the kid to save them. But no, I love when they're figuring out, okay, what's your, because poor Bud Bundy, his curse is he has to hang from like a balloon. So he's got to like do that for hours on the shoot. Richard Mazur's like, what if I just like walked in place? That's something. That's an action I can repeat for this 8-hour shoot.
One of the things I remembered is going to my parents' fireplace tools they had and like the little mini shovel, pretending like wondering like how it would possibly expand into a balloon, and then like pretending to be stuck to the ceiling with it.
No, that's the best. That whole sequence is outstanding, because then eventually, okay, and so then this was the other part. At some point, the gag vacuum cleaner turns into a functional vacuum cleaner.
Yes.
How?
I don't know. And why didn't anyone look inside it to find Mr. Boogity and his cape?
Was he in there the whole time?
I guess so.
I'm confused.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the cape,
they don't really explain that.
I thought the cape kind of, If just from watching the first entry in the canon, the cape is sucked into the machine and thereby pulls Mr. Boogity with it. It is then spit back out in a miniature form, right? With a little clown thing that Mr. Boogity then now possesses.
Okay.
See, am I remembering it wrong? I thought the cloak got sucked off of him, which then made Mr. Boogity lose his power. So he disappeared. And then the cape pops back up with, a miniature version.
That's what I had thought, like, is the little, like button on the end of it, where it's like, oh, sequel time, or...
Or is it?
Or is it? Or yes. Yeah, exactly. Join us back in the spring for Mr. Boogity, the series.
Where was that going to go?
I had no idea that was the thing. And Donna brings up, like, where are you going with this?
Yeah.
Like, Does Mr. Boogity show up in every episode? Is he like the, is he their Wilson? Does he help them solve problems?
Does this become a comedy? Like what, how does this come back?
They just learn to coexist with the ghost. I mean, I'm sure that the Disney Channel in the 80s had came up with worse ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But this seems like it would be like, I loved it. Donna loved it. I know other people that have referenced it. Like, it seems like it would be a huge hit, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know if you know how well it did.
Maybe it just had to strike you at a certain age. So I think if you saw it at a certain age, it was beloved to you. Because Christiane, she's 10. Mm-hmm. So she's right in that sweet spot. I was 9. Then I was 10 when the second one came out. So clear impression to me. My mother does not remember watching it at all. No impression of her. You're older. You saw it. So nothing on you.
Nothing on me. No, I mean, this was definitely, I mean, this would have been a vehicle for kids, but they could have made a show. Like I said, you know, there was.
I just don't know how this is a TV show.
It probably isn't. I mean, I think we've got our two movies and I think, we're good.
I think if we need a Boogity 3, where are they now? I mean, they never really explain what happened to all of the original castmates that did not come back.
No. Well, yes, because a year later we get Bride of Boogity, the sequel, and the parents both come back, but the only kid that comes back is Bud Bundy, David Faustino. John Astin gets replaced. Benji Gray. So, like, they replace him with everybody. They do add Eugene Levy. So there is a small upgrade there. So when he popped up when we watched the sequel, I was like, oh, this makes me happy. But I don't know. I think this. Oh, so, but there's the origin stories of this go even further back, because originally Mr. Boogity was intended to be an airplane-like spoof of horror films. This was basically supposed to be Scary Movie, like 20 years before Scary Movie. So after it didn't sell, the writers then handed it over to Disney. Disney saw the potential in it, and they originally... this was originally meant to be a vehicle for Cheech and Chong.
Oh.
So, yeah. So when Disney then picked it up, they were like, well, no, we can't do that. And they wanted to tone down they toned down the humor to try to make it more of a family-friendly style horror movie, which is eventually, you know, what we got. And they had eventually thought about turning it into a series, but of course that doesn't happen. But it does have like a cult following, because like right now its IMDb score is 7.1, which is actually pretty good, I think, for a made-for-TV movie.
Well, I was seeing online when Disney Plus came out that they were trying to start a movement with Mr. Boogity. Did you find that at all?
Yes. People were very excited when Mr. Boogity was announced as one of the movies on Disney Plus. So, yeah, I do think it's turned into, like, this kind of cult following. But, you know, and for good reason. The one thing that... Okay, so here's my other question about this. He's clearly supposed to be the boogeyman, right? Mm-hmm. Not... Yeah. Why is he the Boogity Man? Was there, like, a copyright issue that Disney had to work out? Boogity Man just sounds like way... like.
Well, it's not Boogity Man. It's Mr. Boogity.
Right, but they say in the beginning, watch out for the Boogity Man.
Because he would go boogity.
Yeah. Not boogie. Right.
Right. So it's scarier to hear this man leap out from trees going boogity. Not so boogie. Yeah, that's better than people get up and dance. That's not the same feeling.
It's a reference to how they would, that's how they spoke in colonial New England. They didn't yet drop the boogity.
Okay, so boogie was the urban street slang version of boogity.
That's derivative. What I'm gonna tell myself, yeah.
Derivative from the colonial boogity.
Yeah. Which is like a Scots Irish Gaelic word meaning to scare, I assume.
Okay, I'll go with all of that. So I want to talk a little bit about Christy Swanson in this movie, or at least her character, because her character goes through a lot, including a phenomenal pink jumpsuit that like looks like she looks like a gas station attendant in a musical, because it looks like exactly like she's ready to paint something, but like also wants to look stylish at the same time. But she also then later on gets haunted, and when she wakes up, they say you were saying there's no place like home, and you were clicking your heels. What is? I didn't get the need for the Wizard of Oz reference. Did I miss something?
I don't know about that one. Christian, explain that one. I've been able to explain the other ones.
Thank you, Donna. The script wanted it to say it. That's my explanation for that. Christy Swanson, gorgeous at every age. She has been the girl of Christian's dreams since I saw this movie. When I saw her in Buffy, when she played like Adam Sandler's girlfriend in Big Daddy. And then when she posed nude for Playboy and The Infatuation ended, because Christian, he reached the top of the mountain. So there was no more need to be in love with Christy Swanson anymore. I love the one cultural touchstone that's in it is where she makes the Bruce Springsteen reference.
Oh, yes.
Where she's like taking a shower, getting cleaned up, or like walking down the hallway. She's like, think anybody's here ever heard of Bruce Springsteen? Is like the pinnacle of culture.
And how would she know that they haven't left the house at that point? Right.
No.
She's just been walking around the house. She's like, nobody here. Is like, who's here? And they don't ever really show the town until they go in, until he like goes to visit John Astin. Like she's very solid, you know,
she's a typical teen.
She's a very typical teen.
Is not getting her way.
I thought, yeah. Christian, you were going to say that you gave up on Christy Swanson after you followed her on Twitter. Because I think that's what most...
No. It doesn't exist. I want to go on record, on the podcast record. Whatever Lou's about to say does not yet exist for me. This is Schrodinger's Twitter account. She is both a psychopath and the girl of my dreams simultaneously right now. Tell me what's going on.
Oh no, she is one of the very few remaining far right wing celebrities. She is she's good friends with Scott Baio and
I knew it.
James Woods. She her and what's her face, Stacey Dash, hanging out, doing lots of stuff. So yeah, so maybe that's your thing. I don't know. Hey, but you know. You sold the stock at its peak. Let's just say that.
I did. Yeah. 2004, 2005, whenever that issue came out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Any other scenes or moments that we haven't talked about? I feel like for a 45-minute movie, we may have covered everything. I'm not quite sure. But I want to make sure
I'm
we leave no
problems separating this one from the second one now. Because I keep wanting to say things. I'm like, nope, that's the second one.
I can say that like it was very strange remembering where the commercials came in and not having them be there, because the commercial breaks when you watch this movie are so obvious.
Yes.
As to where they're supposed to be at.
So do you still have the VHS that has the original airing of Mr. Boogity and all the commercials?
I doubt it. If we did, it'd be at my folks' house, but I assume taped over it at some point when I, you know, when I discovered Tales from the Crypt on Fox. yeah, that's probably when I jumped to the next level.
All right. Well, just, I think we've covered most of the trivia from this. Again, not a Rotten Tomato score because this was not released in theaters. So we don't have that. We've got a 7.1 IMDb score. But the last piece of trivia I've got is that the role that eventually went to David Faustino, Bud Bundy, one of the people who that auditioned for that role originally was Joaquin Phoenix. and There's some alternate timeline where he ends up in that movie and David Faustino becomes like the super duper method actor that weirds everyone out, or that maybe Joaquin Phoenix gets married with children. He gets super deep into the role of Bud Bundy.
I mean, he kind of has a, one could make the argument that Joaquin Phoenix's part in, Parenthood,
mm-hmm.
Where he plays Diane Wiest's kid, is the exact same as is just like a more dramatic Bud Bundy.
Yeah, I could. No, I could go with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's take this to the guilt meter. On a scale of 1 to 5 shame spirals, 1 being you love this movie, it's a Halloween tradition, or when any time of the year tradition, you want other people to check this movie out, all the way up to 5 being you either hate this movie, or if you do like this movie, you couldn't recommend it to anyone in good conscience. Where does Mr. Boogity fall on the guilt meter? Christian, we'll start with you.
A one. There's no shame at all that I love this movie. I've been open about it. I don't make a secret of my affection for this movie. And I look forward to sharing it with others in the future.
All right. And Donna, how about you?
I'd say 2.5. I wouldn't mind promoting it to other people, but I don't know how many more times I could watch it.
That's shockingly high.
Because I feel like we're going to see a lot of it in our future with Christine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how many times this will have that same like sprinkle dust of childhood on it.
Fair.
So I want to keep it safe in my memories.
I think I'm going to go with a 2 on it. I'm going to go a little lower than you because I do think like it's worth checking out. Honestly, I think look, there's not a great dearth of Halloween films out there unless you're into horror movies. So especially if you are looking for something that's family friendly, this is good. And it was fun. And I actually would recommend it. And I would recommend watching Bride of Boogity too. Cause like,
you've got to. You could pair it with
yeah.
It.
I mean, you gotta
it's
be
an hour and a half now.
Right. Exactly. They
for
double
once the
yeah.
sequel is twice as long.
Yeah. They double the length time for it. They go full length on that. So yeah, the whole series is like 2 hours and 15 minutes. So you're not out much, but no, I think, yeah, it is, it's some eighties, there's eighties cheesiness to it. But it obviously is still effective, I think for a kid without being like too traumatic for them. So yeah, I think you can find it on Disney Plus right now. So if you're, you know, one of the 60 million or whatever subscribers they have right now, you could go watch it right now and enjoy, a lighthearted, a lighthearted Halloween evening. All right. Well, that's going to do it. I think we tried to make it a rule that we don't talk longer than the movie. I don't know if we broke that rule or not, but hey,
I think we're close. I think you better wrap up.
Yeah. But I want to thank you both for coming on. Christian, what are you up to these days?
Well, normally if you were in Los Angeles, you could see me do improv, but that's not happening. If you want to listen to my history podcast, I mentioned First Tragedy, Then Farce, that is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, you know, other podcast places. So,
all right.
It's a comedy. There's comedy. I don't want to make it sound like it's a very dry thing. We take a current event and, we try to find some historical precedents for it. So in this case, if we were doing this in 1986, we would be telling the story of Mr. Hanover, the man who becomes Mr. Boogity. So,
all right. Donna, how about you? What projects do you have that you're working on right now?
As always, I'm staying off of the social media. So
very,
don't find me, I'll find you.
That's very ominous of you.
Yeah.
Okay. Donna apparently is going to come and get you, everyone. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can always find me on Twitter at the fake Lou Hare. Like I said, this is the first of 2 Halloween or horror themed movies I'm doing this month. Later this month, you'll be able to check out my podcast on Vampire in Brooklyn. starring Eddie Murphy, directed by Wes Craven, celebrating its 25th anniversary. I've never actually seen it. It was recommended to me that I do it. I'm a huge Eddie Murphy fan, so I'm very intrigued by what I'm about to step into. So please be sure to check that out. We got a lot of stuff coming up with Guilty Pleasures. I know next month we're going to be talking about Mortal Kombat. We're going to be talking, and then we're going to be getting into Christmas season, and there is so much stuff coming out for Christmas already. Netflix is just teasing me with tons of delightful trash that I can't wait to talk about. But make sure you're following the Front Row Network on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z, or following us on Facebook, where you can get links to all our shows and find out everything that's going on. You can also follow us on nprillinois.org on the Community Voices tab, so you can see everything that we're going on, and just enjoy the rest of MonsterCast. I know the whole crew was working on stuff, be it flashbacks, classics, new ones. We've got some interviews coming up that are super cool. Just check it all out. But the best way to know is find us on social media and follow us. Also, please, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button on the Guilty Pleasures feed and on the Front Row Network feed. If in the Guilty Pleasures feed you rate and review us and you request something in the review, I'll do it. Throw it at me. Bring it on. Let's go. And also, you can find us on Patreon. We have started a Patreon this month. We are horrible at promoting it, as you can tell, as I'm saying it now in like the last 2 minutes of the podcast. So if you're still listening, bless you. But if you are still listening, you might be the kind of person who would really want to support us. So please find us on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus content and all sorts of different things, and help us keep this podcast going and help us keep down some overhead. But until next time, I hope everybody's doing well. I hope you enjoy your spooky season, as I guess it's called, your Halloween season. Please go out and vote. Make sure you're doing your civic duty. But until next time, for the Front Row Reviews, I'm Lou Hare.
I'm Donna Hare.
I'm Christian Krausman.
And as always, we'll see you in the front row.
Oh. Good evening. Excuse me, I'm just finishing up a little work. Welcome to the Disney Sunday Movie. Now, I admit that tonight's feature, Mr. Boogity, is a little weird. It's a family comedy all about ghosts, evil spirits, and a very haunted house. But look at that. The guys in the special effects department here at the studio knew I was introducing Mr. Boogity. And this is their idea of a little joke. Very funny guys. Pyrotechnics, wonderful, really. Phone book, hot telephone call. Nobody has a magnifying. Okay, fine chair, great. I'm keeping my coffee. Say, guys, this is not funny. This is not funny. I just hope you figured out a way to get me back by next week. Good night, guys.